start on sensation.
Like you're under sedation.
Let's do time warp again. Let's do the time warp again.
Well, I was walking down the street just to have a thing, when a snake of a guy gave me an evil wing. He shook me up, he took me by surprise. He had a pickup track and the devil's eyes. He stared at me and I felt a change. Time and nothing ever would again.
Let's do the time warp again. Let's do the time warp again.
It's just a jump to the left. On your hips.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is the Big Picture. Derek Gary and Chase Blaine with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Write it down. Lock it in. We love to hear from our listeners.
We do indeed.
Coming up later tonight, the endless begging, bribing, municipal prostitution.
It's perhaps the most adorable example of Americanism that I've ever seen.
Yes.
I won't lie to you.
In the efforts to get Amazon's HQ2, we're going to take a look at some of the more ridiculous things that have been done and said as everyone tries to curry favor from Jeff Bezos. And I will tell you definitively what your city can do to guarantee that you get HQ2.
And it's not necessarily sending a 21-foot plant.
No.
Explanation later.
No, it has nothing to do with that. And bad-mouthing your neighboring state is not necessarily the way to get this done either.
Yeah, that's probably, especially when you're essentially a suburb of said neighboring state.
Yeah. So, we're in full dark now.
Yes,
it
right?
It was kind of dark last week. Now we're all the way into dark.
Now we're straight up, like, where I look outside, I'm like, oh, I should be going to bed soon. Oh my God, it's 6.
Yeah.
It's
scary.
The rain's not helping too. All day today, I haven't brought a raincoat because it's still quite warm especially for late October.
Yeah. I cannot wait for this tropical stuff to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, like, come on, New England. I came back here so that I could be cold.
Yeah.
Why don't you throw a sister some help?
Well, we'll see. We'll see in a little bit what the 5-day forecast has in store. But I think we're going to get a little more seasonal. Can I? It's been good spooky weather, though.
It has. The fog has been quite endearing.
Can I tell you how awesome that football game was the other night? Especially given that nobody on TV could see the game.
Oh, that was the best part. And, it looked like they were suddenly like emerging. It was like something out of a horror movie.
Everyone starts texting like me and the guys during the game, like, can you see? Can you see? Can you see? It's like, yes, we can see.
I bet there were a lot of, did he get a touchdown type calls?
I caught the highlights of the game last night on NFL Network, and there were definitely some moments where Chris and Al are sitting
just
up there,
their hands in the air
in the broadcast booth, and they're like, that's a touchdown for somebody.
Well, I was watching it with one of my friends from my day job, and we started watching it, and we're just like, we can't see anything. Let's just drink beer instead.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, was part of the watching the game anyways, but it became more of the focus of the watching
game. And by the way, can we just get that cable cam view all the time for every single game? Because it's not ideal for long pass plays down the field, but for the running game, you can actually see the holes these guys are going through.
Oh, absolutely.
And it gives you a much better sense of what's happening with the offense and the defense out on the field. So,
particularly if Ichabod Crane is trying to ride through on his horse.
Absolutely. I recommend it.
Well, in local news, one of the organizers behind August free speech rally that drew thousands of counter-protesters, present company included, is reportedly suing Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. The Boston Globe reports that Brandon Novum of Lowell is suing Walsh for slander over the mayor's comments leading up to the controversial rally, which took place shortly after the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. Novum tells the Globe he lost his software consulting job the day after the Charlottesville protest, which was nearly a week before the Boston rally took place. The August 19th rally that took place in the Boston Common drew about 50 people and was dwarfed by the counter-protest in which an estimated 40,000 took part. Novum's lawsuit is reportedly seeking $100 million in damages, and Walsh's office declined to comment. Like, come on, man.
What did Marty Walsh say specifically that this gentleman is upset about?
It was almost nothing to do. It was Marty Walsh commenting, if my research is correct, which I believe it is, this young gentleman was present in Charlottesville, and he was one of, as I'm sure many of you remember, it wasn't very long ago, he was one of the pictures that went viral of the, I don't like repeating what they chanted because it's ridiculous. Blood and soil. Yeah. Like all of that lovely stuff.
He was one of the Ku Klux Chad members.
Yeah. And he was one of the, I forgot you like to call them that. He was one of the ones that just happened to be in one of the pictures that went viral.
All right. So he wasn't Ku Klux Chad. He wasn't one of these polo shirt and tiki torch guys. He just happened to be there.
Oh, sure. And he just happened to be one of the ones that organized it in Boston as well.
Well.
But so the picture came up. I guess Marty Walsh basically was just like, yeah, that dude. And I mean, this is, I've seen, having worked for a law firm, I've seen some ridiculous lawsuits in my day. This is him being like, I lost my job, so whatever, it's the mayor, he'll probably settle. Like, that's the only thing that I can gather.
Yeah, I don't think the mayor's going to settle. I think the city is going to be like, this is
screw
stupid.
You, dude.
We'll wait for a judge to throw this out of court because it's a baseless lawsuit.
Well, I shouldn't say neo-Nazi. He's a white nationalist, Derek. Are we really thinking that these people have the best head on their shoulders?
Is he accusing the mayor of slander? Because that would seem to be the case here.
That is exactly, that's what he's suing him for. He's saying him for slander. The mayor leading up beyond the picture of him, which is why he lost his job, the mayor leading up to the rally that was held here basically said, we're going to protect all of our citizens, but we're not going to stand for anything representing hate. We're not going to stand for any violence. We're not going to ABCDEFG. And I suppose he must have mentioned his name at some point in terms of being one of the organizers. That's the thing, is that it's only slander if what you're saying about the person is untrue.
Yeah.
That's something that a lot of people don't understand, is that a lot of people are like, ooh, I can sue them for slander because they were talking trash about me. Was the trash they were talking untrue? Then yeah, you can totally sue them for slander. If it was true, there's not really anything you can do. It's, you know, freedom of speech and all that fun stuff. Especially for someone, I mean, we're talking about the mayor of one of the most major cities in the country. I don't think he's going to say anything that's going to leave him liable for something like that.
Here are two things that Mayor Marty is not known for. Number one, bold.
Don't you love his thick Boston accent?
Number one, bold action.
Marty Walsh.
Mayor Marty is not known for bold action. Number two, fiery rhetoric. Those are two things that Mayor Marty is not known for. So
he's like the antithesis of our current president.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's the thing. It would be like
this is like suing Ed Markey for slander, because everyone would be sitting there being like, "Wait, Ed Markey said something that someone reported? When?
Well, that's the thing is that part of why I love Marty Walsh, actually. I'll say it, Marty, if you're listening. But part of why I love Marty Walsh is that he's such a, and I've had mixed emotions. I've lived a lot of different places, but ultimately I consider myself a Bostonian, and I've had mixed emotions about some of the some of the mayors we've had over the years. You know,
Come on, I like Tommy.
Yeah, of course you do.
I did. Tommy did great things for the city.
He did, but he also, there were times that I was just like, come on, man. Like, you're kind of, what's the word? Waxing your own wheels. Is that a way
of
doing it?
He got to a point where he was treating the city like it was his home.
I can do whatever I want. I own this place.
Yeah, there were some moments, especially toward the end, when he overstepped his bounds a little bit. But by and large,
I shouldn't say Menino was not a terrible mayor by
Menino
any
was
means.
A good mayor for Boston, and he was a willing punching bag for all those of us that made fun of the way that he talked. And
fair point. Greg Murphy has one of the best Menino bits I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. If you're the mayor and you got a sense of humor about the fact that we're all poking fun at you.
It's nice.
It's not like Donald Trump where you say something and the guy comes back and he's like, you're a loser and that's fake news and you're going down sad.
Well, that's what I was going to say is that part of what I love about Marty Walsh is that I think that he's a great representation of the city of Boston and that he is
gets in bar fights at 2 a.m. down by Faneuil Hall with people of other races. No, he doesn't do that.
No, he does not do that.
That would be a great representation of the city of Boston.
No, that would be like the Mark Wahlberg representation of the city of Boston.
Yeah, it's still
pretty
accurate.
The Marty Walsh representation of the city of Boston, which is the good one, is that he's just a down home. I'm not going to mess with you. I'm going to talk to you straightforward. I'm not going to exaggerate, but I'm also not going to try to sugarcoat things. He's a very, I'm going to talk to you like it is kind of guy.
Here's my problem with Marty Walsh. Generally speaking, the guy is pretty harmless, okay? The only time that he stops being harmless is when he sniffs union jobs, and then all of a sudden he will move heaven and earth, regardless of whether or not the project is good for the city of Boston, like the Olympics or Formula One racing, to try and get that project in the city of Boston.
But that's because...
And he will step all over everybody to make it happen because he's got to keep the base happy.
But that's even more so a representation of the city of Boston is where I always mean like, we're awesome. Let's try to do something great.
No, because it's not even...
Let's just go get a pint at the bar.
It's about the union jobs. And it's always been painfully obvious that it's about the union jobs.
But
trust me, if Amazon came in to Boston and said, we want you to take down the Bunker Hill Monument and move Old Ironsides and mow down Charlestown so we can put our headquarters there, Mayor Marty would be all over it. He'll be like, I got my union boys and the bulldozers right now. We're going over and taking the stuff out.
But that's also why he's perfect for Boston, because while he would be all over it, all of us loudmouth buttheads would come marching down on City Hall and be like, hey, dude. Nah. And you go, all right.
That's the one check that you have against Marty Walsh is that he does govern by poll.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is that's why he's good for Boston, because even regardless of his ideas that he might have for himself, he's straightforward. And when the city of Boston says, nah, dude, he listens. As opposed to, you know, like I said, the president. But that's why I think that this lawsuit is hilarious because there are so many politicians that you can attack for saying something about them that's ingenuine or false or slanderous or however he wants to try to frame it. But Marty Walsh is not one of them.
No, good luck. Good luck getting this one to stick.
Best of luck to you, son. Well, national news, speaking of politicians being kind of off the... Republican leaders of three House committees announced yesterday that they are launching two separate investigations involving former Secretary of State and former U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. One probe will deal with why the Obama administration allowed a Russian company to acquire U.S. uranium mines, and a second will look into why the FBI decided not to pursue charges against Clinton for the use of a personal email server. One of the committees involved, the House Intelligence Committee, is also involved in the ongoing investigation of whether Donald Trump's presidential campaign colluded with the Russian government's efforts to meddle in the U.S. election, which was intensified by the revelation that the DNC and Clinton presidential campaign funded the research that helped create the original dossier on the subject.
Wait, what? Could you repeat that last part, please? Please?
Intensified by the revelation that the DNC and Clinton presidential campaign funded the research that helped create the original dossier on the subject.
Huh. So what you're saying...
You should see the word I can't say on the radio eating grin that Derek has on his face right now.
So what you're saying, Shea Spillane, is that this Russia investigation, this collusion with the Russians, all this Russian stuff that we've been hearing about since January, was actually part of a report that was paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign during the election last year.
You act like I'm a Hillary supporter. I just thought she was lesser of two evils. I wanted Bernie to win.
No. I wanted Bernie to win too, and we would have been on the same page with that.
Imagine that utopia.
But I just want to point this one thing out, because what we've been hearing is Russia, 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 Russia. I can't even turn on CNN anymore.
Russia.
It's pretty much what it is. Like, can we get Eve Plum to go on CNN and just be like, Russia, 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 because that's all it is on that station. MSNBC isn't quite as bad, but they're up there. And we've got the special counsel, and we've had people resign, and we've got all these people running around all over the place investigating things. And all of this turns out to be a report that was paid for by the Democratic National Committee.
I mean...
And here's a timeline on this, by the way, because there's been confusion about this. Because there are those in the Democrat side of things who are saying, no, a Republican paid for this. And by the way, it is widely believed that the Ted Cruz campaign started the initial opposition research. There is a company called Fusion GPS. They have nothing to do with maps or where your car is located. It's not that kind of GPS. This is a political hatchet company. Okay, they go out and they conduct research, and in a political campaign, they dig up nasty things that you can use against your opponent.
Such a wonderful country we live in.
So somebody during the primary hired a Republican during the primary. We don't know what campaign it was attached to, but it's widely speculated that it's Ted Cruz. Hired Fusion GPS to go dig up some dirt on Trump. That candidate dropped out, and when it became clear that Trump was going to be president around April, or the nominee, I should say, around April of last year, the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee, through a law firm, reached out to Fusion GPS and said, keep doing your research. So that was finalized in June.
I would say, which is actually how all of this came out, was a member of that law firm is the one who came forward yesterday to be like, yeah, they paid us.
Well, because because they were involved in a different lawsuit, and their attempt to get the judges to get a judge to block their financial disclosure failed. So they were going to get outed, and they just got in front of it. Fusion GPS hires Michael Steele, who is the former British intelligence agent who wrote the Trump dossier. So all of that part of it, the whole Trump dossier, the whole Steele business, comes from the Democratic National Committee. You might remember them as the people who kept Bernie Sanders from being the nominee, and from the Hillary Clinton campaign. You might remember them as the ones who colluded with the Democratic National Committee to keep Bernie Sanders from being the nominee. So we've just spent 10 months running around in circles, hearing about Russia, 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 because of dirty tricks.
Russia, Russia, Russia.
By the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. Is that where we're at here?
But I mean,
is Don Lemon crying again? Is Don Lemon crying again?
If we're being perfectly frank, are we that surprised?
No.
I mean, because I remember the whole Russia dossier even broke, before we had any concrete idea of who it was, my first thought was, who is this in the best interest of? Who would be the one to benefit from this coming forth, especially when it originally did, which was when it was still within the parameters of an electoral recall?
Yeah.
It's like when I read the story, I was like, yeah, duh. Like,
this, by the way, was the report that said that Donald Trump had been frolicking with prostitutes who urinated on each other on a bed that Barack Obama had slept in Moscow.
Oh, yeah. I had almost forgotten about that because so many other terrible things have broken about him since then.
Which is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life to begin with.
Is it, though?
Yes. Yes.
You really think that's entirely impossible?
Harvey Weinstein wasn't that creative.
Yeah, that's because he pays other people to be that creative for him.
But I'm just saying, Harvey Weinstein hasn't even been accused of anything like that. So, no, I don't think there are any water... There's no water sports taking place in the five-star suite in the Russian hotel. For obvious reasons, that's not happening.
You say tomato, yeah.
All right, you believe what
tomato.
You want. And then, of course, we got the whole thing with the Russians, the uranium, and the millions of dollars funneled into the Clinton Foundation by a Canadian company acting on behalf of the Russians. Whenever you see individuals or organizations using third parties to move money around, generally a good indication that they're doing something that they don't want to be caught doing.
I would say just automatically assume that it's sketchy.
Yeah. Yeah. May not be illegal in the technical definition of the law, but it's something that they don't want associated with them. You bring in the third party so that you've got cover. And this is where the whole thing with Fusion GPS comes in, and the fact that they're hired through this law firm. So the DNC and the Clinton campaign throw money at this law firm and say, go get the stuff on Trump. Go get us something. And then the law firm can sit there and say, oh, attorney-client privilege. We can't talk about where our money comes from or who we gave our money to. So you've got that middleman in there. This is something that they learned from the mob years ago. The guys, the godfather.
That's so wonderful to think about our government officials taking a cue from Al Capone.
Here's two things. Gotti. Here's two things that the godfather never does, unless he's an idiot like Whitey Bulger, who was mentally out of control. Yeah. He was running things around here. Here's two things the godfather never does. Number one, the godfather never kills anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the godfather never tells someone to go kill somebody. If you want somebody removed and you are the head of the organization, you call in one of your capos. You get one of your lieutenants to come in and you say, hey, go get the animal. Go get Joey the animal to do something about that guy.
Even Charles Manson knew that.
Yeah. And then the lieutenant goes out and says, hey, go take care of that guy, to Joey the animal. And the animal says, hey, who's saying I should do this? The lieutenant says, I'm saying you should do this. Mm-hmm. Okay, no problem, no questions asked. That way, if Joey gets picked up and somebody says, hey, Joey, who ordered the hit? The lieutenant takes the fall and the godfather gets to keep walking.
God, it sounds good to be the godfather.
That's
not how, that I want to, you know, put out any hits, but still.
That's how corrupt organizations operate. So you look at what's happening.
I love that you're using the mafia as an analogy for our government. And it's totally accurate. That's the worst part.
Look what's happening with the DNC. Look what's happening with the Clinton Foundation. It's all there. It's all right there. Everybody involved in these deals knows they're not supposed to be happening, knows that the optics on them are terrible, knows that, yes, there is probably some pay-for-play going on here. People are throwing money around to get influence, and people are throwing money around to dig up dirt, but we can't tie the Clintons to it. Got to have that lieutenant in there.
God. Who basically... Well, that's... I always find it interesting when a lawyer is suddenly like, attorney-client privilege doesn't really matter anymore. No.
Yeah. None of this, by the way, makes Trump a victim, as he claimed.
Oh, no.
Or a sympathetic character.
Well, I think that's the thing that's being lost on a lot of people, is that everyone's focusing. It's crazy looking at everything that's being... I hate Facebook so much. But it's... I love it and I hate it. But it's crazy seeing all the posts on Facebook is that everyone's being like, see, now Trump's fine because it was Hillary. And it's like, yeah, she funded the investigation. That doesn't make it null and void.
Yeah.
It's still a real thing. Like if it was some random millionaire that was just like, I want to see what Trump's doing with Russia. You know, Like, it doesn't matter. The actual facts still remain.
But it is a rare misstep from our orange president to play the victim card. Because it's like, you're Donald Trump. You can't play the victim card.
Yeah,
you got elected because people are sick of people playing the victim card. You can't turn around and do that. You can turn around and say, I told you so, fake news, and then walk away. Don't use the word victim to describe yourself. Do not use the word victim to describe yourself.
Maybe just stop talking and tweeting altogether. That would be magical.
Not going to happen as much as we may hope and dream. In world news, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia surprised guests on Tuesday by pledging to turn away from extremist Islam. Speaking at an international business gathering in the capital of Riyadh, bin Salman said, quote, "We are only returning to what we used to be, to moderate Islam, open to the world and all religions. We won't waste 30 years of our lives dealing with any extremist ideas. We will eradicate extremism," end quote. The comments signal significant cultural and societal shifts that the 32-year-old crown prince intends to make as he moves Saudi Arabia away from an oil-based economy and toward an innovation economy. As part of that plan, bin Salman announced a $500 billion project that will create a new city called Neom on the Red Sea coast near the borders with Jordan and Egypt.
Baby steps.
So a couple weeks ago, we talked about how women are going to be able to drive.
Yeah,
in Saudi Arabia.
As I'm looking at my research into this, there is literally a picture of a Saudi Arabian woman driving.
And the stuff that came out of the meeting, because they had this big conference in Riyadh, and they basically invited business leaders from all over the world to come in, and it was basically get to meet the new king of Saudi Arabia. He's crown prince right now, but the power has been handed over to him. And it was get to meet the new Saudi Arabia. And he's basically coming in and saying, look, we're done with the theocracy. We recognize that oil is not going to be viable for us anymore. So we're investing in technology. And we want you to come with us.
Well, I think something very, very tactful that one of the leading businessmen in the country said is economic transformation is important, but equally essential is social transformation. You cannot achieve one without the other. The speed of social transformation is key and has to be manageable. It's refreshing. I'll put it that way. It's refreshing to hear a statement like that coming out of the Middle East, because so often I feel like as Americans, our beef, unfortunately, with the Middle East is being like, oh, you're stuck in your ways that we don't, like, get with the times, yo. You know, like, I feel like that's a lot of times kind of our battle cry against the Middle East. And to hear something so enlightened as to really recognize that it's not just we don't have to just focus on, like, the money end of things. We really have to change the way that we live, change the way that we are as a society. It's a really refreshing thing to hear. Out of a place like Saudi Arabia.
Well, you...
Especially as a woman.
You have a problem because oil is a dead end. And they know... They're smart enough to know that oil is a dead end.
Yeah, they're seeing the cliff that they're driving off of.
As long as it's oil and that power and that money is concentrated in a small group of people, you can run your country any way you want.
Yeah.
Oil is 90% of their economy. It's 80% of their economy over there. So there's a handful of people that... run that industry. There's a handful. All the money flows up to the Saudi royal family. And yeah, you want to be, you know, you want to be a Wahhabist state? Go for it. You know, you want theological law? Go for it. But now the oil isn't working anymore. We're looking at 20 years down the road and nobody's going to be buying our oil anymore. We're either going to be poor or we fix this now. And the way that you fix it now is you go all in on technology.
Yeah.
Problem if you go all in on technology is you now have to compete with Japan and Germany and the United States and European countries and Russia that may not all be as progressive as the United States claims to be, but to varying degrees allow women autonomy.
I would say at least have the idea of such a thing.
Yeah. Allow some freedom of expression, allow people to dress the way that they want to dress, varying degrees of tolerance of homosexuality. You know, Russia, obviously, it's a no-go. But in the technology economy, it's understood that if you're smart enough, we don't care who you are. If you're smart enough to go build this thing that's going to change the world, we want you here. Saudi Arabia is now going to have to fight to get those people the same way that every other country in the world does. And that, more than anything else, is pushing societal change. A lot of people are uncomfortable with that for obvious reasons. They are conservative, they have the power, and they don't like it. Part of the way that they have the power is by marginalizing certain groups of society. Okay? If you're in power and you want to keep power, you divide your enemies. But the other side of this is, in adopting this sort of a strategy, you now have to look at how the balance of power shifts in the Middle East. Because what's been going on for the last, we'll call it 40 years, longer than this, but certainly for the last 40 years, is you have Iran and you have Saudi Arabia. You have the two different branches of Islam, basically operating at a state level. And operating in opposition to each other and operating to try and eradicate the other. There's been no direct war between Iran and Saudi Arabia, but there have been plenty of proxy battles.
Yeah, there's been lots of, like, if you do this, it's going to tip me over the edge.
Which is why you have people in Saudi Arabia funding Al-Qaeda. It's why you have people in Iran funding the Houthis. It's all about who's got the control in the Middle East over the Arab world as a whole. That's what these two countries are duking it out for. Now, if Saudi Arabia...
And who's going to define the 21st century Arab?
If Saudi Arabia takes a step backward and says, look, we're not going to be a Wahhabist society anymore. We're going to rule of law and we're going to secularism. That now isolates Iran as a dinosaur. And Iran is not a technologically unsophisticated country. Iran has great scientists and engineers.
Well, which I think is the reason that the quote that I said before is so important, is that you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how technologically advanced you are, or economically, or which, if you're socially behind, You're not going to be on the radar of the rest of the world.
But now here's the question. Does Iran now...
At least not positively.
Because Iran reacts in one of two ways. As Saudi Arabia unwinds its theological influence and seeks to be an economic power in the region, does Iran do the same thing and open itself up and say, no, we want to be a technological country and not just known for our brand of extremist Islam? Or do they go the opposite route and say, okay, they're weak now, we can take over everybody? And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Interesting or terrifying?
I don't know how much appetite there is for, like, all-out conflict in that part of the world. Because a lot of those frustrations...
I feel like they're all really tired.
A lot of those frustrations and a lot of those desires just got dealt with in Syria.
Yeah.
And Iraq. Where everybody who was in the region who wanted to go and kill other people had the opportunity to go and do that. And they're pretty much done with that now. And they've flattened major sections of those countries that need to be rebuilt now. So it's interesting. And it'll be interesting to see what happens politically. Now, the other possibility in this is that, you know, some mullah decides they didn't like where Bin Salman's going with this and just has him knocked off. But as a member of the Saudi royal family, he's pretty well protected.
I would say that
he's pretty powerful.
That would be both difficult to pull off and catastrophic to be caught doing.
Yeah, but if you're that upset and you're that concerned and you think you can get away with it, it could be a little bit of palace intrigue coming in here in the next couple of years. So definitely.
So stay tuned, kids.
It's a very interesting time. Keep an eye on what goes on in Saudi Arabia, because that is going to be a major influence on what happens in the Middle East over the next few years.
Whew.
Yeah. Fun stuff. In sports news, the Red Sox announced Sunday that Alex Cora will become the team's 47th manager, assuming duties once he finishes up as bench coach for the National League champion Houston Astros in the World Series. Cora's name is familiar to fans as he played on the 2007 World Series team. This will be the first manager position the 42-year-old Cora has held, but he has established himself as a detail-oriented analyst in Houston who can command support from young players.
I say get it.
New blood.
Yeah, I like it.
I like the old guy.
I mean, I do too. I'm still always like Franco.
I think I didn't have any problem with what Francona was doing. Clearly everybody else did. I'm in the minority in that opinion.
Are you kidding? I didn't.
You know,
because I love Francona.
Every time I bring it up, people are like, "Oh, Francona's a bum. He had to go." And I'm like, "Why? What did he do?"
Yeah,
he's a bum.
If anything, like he kind of things didn't go too terrible under Francona.
No, and I mean, I think you can raise a legitimate question of whether or not. I mean, we know that Dustin Pedroia was hurt now because he's having knee surgery.
Yeah, they say he's out until after spring training.
7 months, so we're not going to see him until possibly after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I was going to say at least till the end of May, beginning of June. So definitely he's not going to start the season.
So that guy's
my poor little boo.
That guy's hurt. Our pitching was good at times, not good at others. Our hitting was inconsistent. We still made it to the playoffs. In a division with the New York Yankees, that's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we didn't get swept by Houston. And Houston's in the World Series. That's pretty good.
And honestly, obviously, don't strangle me through the microphone, Boston. But obviously, that's not fair to say because all of you and all of us are the biggest Red Sox fans ever. But while I was disappointed that the Sox didn't make it to the World Series, I also sat there being like, you know, Houston kind of needs this. It's like when the Saints won the Super Bowl after Katrina. Or at least, I'm not saying, trust me, I would have preferred the Sox be in the World Series. But like right now, I'm looking at, the game starts at 8:09, by the way. Keep listening to us. Just put it on mute in the background. That's the beauty of baseball. But I'm rooting for the Astros in this one.
We got wildfires versus flooding this World Series. What do you take? I'm going with the wildfires.
I think the wildfires are in Northern California.
Yeah, but that's still, no, they've been making their way down into the Los Angeles area.
Yeah, well, I lived in LA. I was around multiple fires. I actually had to be evacuated from my apartment building.
Yeah.
And by apartment building, I mean the loft I lived in illegally above a tire shop. But that being said, LA's got a lot going for it. I think Houston needs this one.
Sexual harassment allegations versus flooding?
Yeah, I think flooding wins.
Flooding definitely wins, but yeah. I'm liking the Dodgers.
Oh, God, Derek.
They got home field, and they're a game up.
One of these days, you and I are going to agree on something wholeheartedly. Everyone keep their fingers crossed, and go Astros!
Neither one of these teams has significant World Series experience.
That's true. Well, it is very exciting. The Dodgers haven't been, I mean, I will say, I'm literally only rooting for the Astros out of the fact that I was like, they beat the Sox, and I feel like they earned this.
Sure. Well, they beat the Yankees.
And I would say, and they beat the Yankees.
And the Yankees were playing pretty damn hard. I mean, granted, Alex Judge.
That was a touch-and-go situation for some of those games.
Alex Judge choked in the postseason, or Aaron Judge choked in the postseason, but the Yankees played hot at the end of September.
But I will say it is, I believe the Dodgers haven't been in the World Series, I believe it was since 1988 or something crazy like that.
It's been a while.
But yeah, I mean, best of luck to both of them, but Mama's Team Astros, and it's not just because I just left that wretched city. With all due respect to the people suffering from the wildfires, but
I like the Dodgers' chances.
I like the Astros' faces, so get it.
This is not a legitimate sports discussion.
This really isn't.
We should move on.
Yeah. In entertainment news. Unfortunately, Fats Domino, the piano-playing prodigy with lightning-fast fingers whose pioneering sound blended rock with R&B, has died at the age of 89. Domino, who is famously a native of New Orleans, died at his private residence early yesterday morning, according to the Jefferson Parish Coroner's Office in Louisiana. He first learned to play the piano from his brother-in-law, crafting a style that would inspire Elvis Presley and the Beatles. In his 20s, Domino gained fame with the 1955 hit Ain't That a Shame, which was later covered by John Lennon, and his 1956 rock and roll version of Blueberry Hill. The song shot to number 2 on the top 40 charts, and that was even before he performed it on The Ed Sullivan Show. He found further success with a string of songs in the late 1950s and early 1960s, including I'm Walkin' and Walkin' to New Orleans.
Normally, we would talk about this story, but instead of that, we're going to take a quick break and listen to some Fats Domino right now. This clip actually just went up online. It's from Austin City Limits of him doing one of his hits. And someone called up during the last hour and requested some Fats Domino.
Yeah, this is going to you, caller.
Absolutely. This is going to that caller and everybody else who remembers fondly the music of somebody who really was one of the greatest influences on rock and roll and pop music, not just in the United States, but worldwide in the 20th century. Just remembering Fats Domino.
Thank you ever so kindly. It's certainly a pleasure to be here in Austin on this TV. So whatever y'all want to hear, I'm on up here playing, trying to guess what you wonderful people want to hear. Just let me know. I'll be glad to play it. Now, right now, I'm going to do a number. Thank you. Now, right now, I'm going to do a number. I just can't help it. I played for such a wonderful man that I love so well. Like I said, I can't help it. I say it everywhere I play every night. I play this number so many times. And I think with this man every time I come to my bandstand. I play this for the great Elvis Presley, ladies and gentlemen. You know the most is still on Blueberry Hill and lingered until my dream came true. The wind and the willow play love sweet melody, but all of the time we may want never to be. No ear of war, you for me still. For you, my thrill. Sweet melody, but a whole of the heart we meant for never to be. We're a war, you hold me still. For you are my thrill.
American legend Fats Domino.
Oh, that made me want to dirty dance in a basement.
Gone today at the age of 89 after an exceptional life. We will miss him dearly.
And honestly, like you said, Derek, pioneer. He's one of those people that you can't say you don't like him if you like any kind of music, or at least that you don't respect him if you like any kind of music, because he laid the groundwork for so many different bands and artists and just genres. Like, he, when you think of any sort of hybrid of anything, he laid the groundwork for that to be possible.
You can hear so many Beatles songs
just in that
incredible.
I say the same thing about the Beatles as well. I'm just like, do you like Led Zeppelin? Oh, you do? Then you don't not like the Beatles.
Yeah, pretty much. And you don't like Fats Domino.
Yeah. Oh, you like the Beatles? Then you don't not like Fats Domino.
And the other great thing about Fats Domino is even though he fell out of favor and his new music career more or less came to an end in the 1960s, he was still out touring and playing, for most of the rest of his life. He was very active in his community down in New Orleans. And nobody ever said a bad thing about the guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was actually, I was reading about him, obviously, whenever someone famous and venerable passes, you kind of look into their background. And he was actually living in New Orleans at the time of Hurricane Katrina. And the city was in a state of panic, not just about the hurricane, but about, is Fats Domino okay?
Yeah.
And as luck would his entire mansion down there was flooded. But as luck would have it, him and his family escaped in a boat and released a press statement being like, hey, we're okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the concern.
Yeah.
But what I thought was so great about him, which was similar in a large way to Elvis, was that he was so devoted to, as much as he received national acclaim, he was so devoted to his hometown, to his community, whereas he never wanted to abandon them. He's literally stuck with them till the end.
A big part of the reason that New Orleans became a major music center is because Fats Domino was down there.
Which is the same with Elvis in Memphis.
Yeah. Yep. So that's how much influence that guy had.
Yeah.
And just a fantastic...
R.I.P. Fats.
Just a fantastic musician, fantastic person. In technology news... You might not be a fan of Amazon's latest plan to combat package theft.
Oh, darn. You took one of my did you hears.
Amazon Prime customers in 37 cities can now take advantage of Amazon Key by first buying a smart lock and a cloud-based security camera for $249. Once those are in place, Amazon delivery people will be able to open their doors for up to 5 minutes to drop off packages and presumably let their pets out to roam the neighborhood. These deliveries will be live streamed to customers via the security camera so they can keep an eye on delivery staff. The smart locks can also be configured to give access to friends on a one-time or permanent basis or to allow access to people working in your home.
Technology has terrified me in many ways before.
I let the Amazon guy in my house.
But this is, that's an awesome way to get robbed.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even with, they're trying to say that it's completely secure because you can watch a live stream of the whole thing taking place, and you can opt to, that is one thing, is you can opt to be like, nah, don't let them go in my house, just have them leave it outside. But if a teenager can trick their parents' nanny cam when they're away to make it look like nothing's going on when they're having a party, an Amazon employee can arrange you being robbed.
Let me tell you,
despite the live stream.
I wouldn't necessarily worry about, I wouldn't necessarily worry about the Amazon employees. Okay, yeah, I would. But I think the greater risk in something like this is that it is a matter of time before hackers figure out how to operate these locks.
Oh, totally.
And just show up when you're not home and open your door and walk in and steal your stuff.
I would say that was going to be my other argument, is it's a computer. Computers can be broken into.
Yeah.
It's, this is...
People have been breaking into houses.
This is worse than the drone idea.
People have been breaking into houses using garage door openers and cloning the codes for decades now. Yeah. So, hey... Let's put a computer-controlled lock on the house. That'll be secure. Yeah, no. Not letting the Amazon people into the house. But on the plus side, you might get lucky. You might get really lucky, like the couple in Florida that ordered some empty storage bins, and they arrived filled with 65 pounds of marijuana.
So I have to get one of those Amazon lock things.
And here's the worst news. The packages were shipped from Massachusetts. You know why that's worse news? Because 65 pounds of our marijuana is now impounded in Florida.
I was just going to say, they have plenty of drugs. What are you doing, Massachusetts? We need that.
That's like a week's supply. 65 pounds of Massachusetts marijuana is in Florida.
3 or 4 days.
No, that's a week. I don't know. Not everybody is smoking as much of this stuff as you are.
I've cut back. Come on. Make it easier to get a script. Seriously. I miss that's the one of the few things I miss about California. It was like going to the convenience store.
We're gonna have a wreck in another year or so. You just got to sit tight. And in the meantime...
Sit tight. I've been sitting tight for a decade.
And in the meantime, nobody gives a damn if you're smoking. It's
fair
it's
point.
So decriminalized.
And that's the thing is, it's not about the actual smoking. It's about the accessibility to the things to smoke.
There's a guy on the corner. He's got the stuff.
You're going against everything we were taught in Dare, Derek.
Just walk down Commonwealth Avenue. Just walk down Commonwealth Avenue in Boston.
For those of you who can't see, I'm doing the I'm smoking a joint.
Yeah.
Hand motion.
Walk down Commonwealth
Those
Avenue.
Those of you can't see. Everyone except Derek.
Walk down Commonwealth Avenue in Boston with a pleading look in your eyes, and within 5 minutes, you will have marijuana.
Give me pot.
I particularly recommend the stretch between Packard's Corner and Harvard Street.
That's exactly what I was picturing. Not gonna lie.
No one. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast. Still tropical. Some of us are a little sick of all this tropical nonsense that's going on. Let's see if we can get out of this.
Give me some cold. I'm wearing a sweater dress.
Well, not tonight. Rain. Lows in the mid-50s. And, of course, with the rain, it's going to be humid. Tomorrow, rain again. Highs in the low 60s. But once the rain clears out of here later in the day tomorrow, temperatures are going to start to drop. We'll get lows in the mid-40s in some places. And then Friday, starting to feel a little bit more like autumn. A little less humidity. Sunny skies, high around 60, lows around 50 Friday night. Saturday, partly cloudy skies. Good day to get out for Salem or any other like Halloween partying that you're planning to do.
I would say Saturday I do want good weather because my costume doesn't come equipped with a jacket.
So it's a good night. You won't need the jacket for the Halloween party. Highs are going to be in the mid-60s. Lows in the mid-50s on Saturday night. No rain. Sunday, if you're going to the game, keep an eye on the sky. Showers are expected late in the day. So we should get through the game okay, but maybe the rain starts before the game ends. Keep an eye on the forecast. Highs in the mid-60s. Lows in the mid-50s Sunday night. And then on Monday, partly cloudy, a true autumn day. Highs around 60, lows in the mid-40s, and a lot of wind blowing around. But it's that southwesterly wind, which means it's keeping the humidity up. We need the northwesterly wind, not the southwesterly wind. Why are we still getting the southwesterly wind?
I liked the way you said autumn. Autumn. You sounded as though you were David Alan Boucher.
I'm a big fan of autumn.
Autumn. Hey. It's a way nicer word than fall.
Yeah.
It's fall.
It's autumn in New England.
Autumn.
Everyone loves that.
Autumn.
Hey, coming up at 9 o'clock tonight, something else everybody loves, On the Town with Mikey D. Everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Until then, you got us. And when we come back, all the other stories that caught our attention this week here on WMFO Medford.
Have you ever noticed a number and a shield along with a quality grade mark on the meat you buy? Well, that's the yield grade. Although the yield grade is important to the retailer, you don't need to be concerned about it unless you're buying a large cut of meat like an untrimmed wholesale cut. The yield grade tells you how much usable meat you will have after the waste is removed. A yield grade 1 has the most usable meat and a yield grade 5 the least. To learn more, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, 20250.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Before.
101.5 FM WMFO Medford. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Pullane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock if you want to give us a call at 855-915-9636. For those of you more letterly than numberly inclined, that's going to be 855-915-WMFO. This is one of our favorite portions of the program that we have. It's called Did You Hear? Where we essentially quiz each other on some of the most interesting, weird, or compelling stories that have happened in the last week. And I'm going to start us off with time zone.
Is this the ongoing attempt to move the Commonwealth of Massachusetts into the Atlantic time zone for reasons that no one fully understands?
Well, they understand them better now.
Oh, we have reasons now.
Oh, yes.
And what are those reasons?
Well, so they released the first draft in the end of September, and a second draft will be put up for final vote on November 1st, and that actually just got released. But it's supposed to go to lawmakers, and the reasons are... First of all, the benefits could be that it could boost consumer spending in that it's lighter out. People are going to stay out shopping and stay awake longer in order to shop. It's going to lower rates of certain types of crime.
What crime rates is it going to lower? No, it's not.
People who are like, oh, it's dark, I can commit a crime earlier in the day. Basically, the later it gets dark,
No, that's not how that works.
In your opinion.
No, that's not how that works. We have plenty of crime being committed in broad daylight.
The main impetus for this is that they think it's going to be good for public health, because part of the reason for seasonal affective disorder is that there are people working 9 to 5s that get out of work and it's dark.
Oh, God. Yes, that's called life. And somehow...
But it's not life for everybody.
Yeah, but it's life here in Massachusetts, and somehow we have dealt with it...
But it doesn't have to be.
For 300 years. I mean, we have been here longer than most people in this country.
Then and why do you think everyone's so grumpy here?
Because it's a miserable place to live. Have you seen the weather? This is one of the worst places to live in America.
I'm going to have to disagree with that.
But we got lobster, and we got fall foliage.
And super cute snowflakes when they're not annoying and brown and gross.
Yeah.
Once they're on the ground and covered in dirt. And
so we put up with all the aggravation, and we stay here.
But, what they are saying, though, which is going to be what's difficult to get it to pass, is that they would have to get other states in New England on board, particularly the ones joining us in the Eastern Seaboard. So New Hampshire, Maine, and Rhode Island would have to be on board in order for this to go through. But if you look at a map, it actually makes sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
It does make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
At least for Eastern Massachusetts. It actually makes more sense for Maine and New Hampshire.
And you know what?
Than it does.
You would have to get Quebec province on board as well, because they're in the same time zone as Maine and New Hampshire. And what are you going to do with Vermont and Connecticut?
Just tell them to screw themselves. Yeah. I don't know.
You do not want to live on the boundary of a time zone. Nobody wants to live on the boundary of a time zone.
That is fair.
Go ask people in the middle of the country what it's like.
Oh, no. I remember when I was in Arizona. I don't know if you've ever looked at a time zone map, but if you do, everyone listening, go on Google right now and type in time zone map. You'll note that the Pacific time zone, at least this is usually the way it goes, Pacific time zone is going to be blue. The mountain time zone is going to be red, and then Arizona is purple, because they don't have a specific time zone that they're a member of. When I was in the middle of Arizona, I was at Denny's, and I looked at the waitress and I said, I'm not an idiot, but what time is it here?
Yeah.
And she goes, according to us, it's 12:15.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell does that mean? Like, that's not really totally answering my question.
But the thing about it is, if you spend any time out in Kansas or Colorado, you understand why mountain time exists.
Oh, yeah.
Because
it's where all of a sudden there's moons.
In Los Angeles, the sun stays out until 9 or 9:30 at night.
Yeah, it's weird.
In Colorado, it's gone at 6 because the mountains are in the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's actually, that's one of the more beautiful sunsets I've seen.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, look, there's a sun. Oh, look, there's mountains. Oh, it's suddenly super dark.
But it's like, it happens wicked early.
Yeah.
You know, you can be in Illinois, and it's like, the sun's going down at